taking the show on the road for the first time ever. We're at the NHL Fan Fair. Bill Daly, Deputy Commissioner, Vice President of Hockey Operations from the National Hockey League, Chris King, and the man that I work with and for, George McPhee, President of Hockey Operations with the Vegas Golden Knights. Some emotional conversation and a whole lot of laughs coming up.
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
Heads up!
Oh, how'd that feel, old man?
You guys are sensitive over there.
It's the Chirp Podcast on location, our first venture outside of the studios in Summerlin, which is also my office. So we're looking forward to this. We're at NHL Fan Fair 2022 as the National Hockey League's All-Star Game and Weekend comes to Las Vegas for the first time. A handful of people, the movers and shakers around the hockey world, are going to pop on the program over the next couple of episodes, including the Deputy Commissioner of the NHL, Bill Daly, who I haven't seen in like 2 years face-to-face. Yeah, we talked.
Pandemic.
Yeah. How are you? You look great.
I'm good. I'm hanging in there, for sure.
Is it less stressful now, or are you still at code red?
Well, I would say we had a very, very stressful time from about mid-December to, you know, first week, second week of January, where, you know, COVID was just overtaking the league. Then we were moving games, and, you know, we had to postpone and reschedule more games by far this year than we even did last year. So it was challenging, and at times you didn't know whether you're going to get through it, but I feel like we're out the other end a little bit. And I think we feel good about our ability to complete the season in the originally scheduled window.
Those 3 weeks for Beijing came in handy, didn't they?
Well, we wouldn't have been able to do it without those three weeks, for sure. And the fact of the matter is we had to reschedule over 100 games, and all but a very small handful we were able to put into that window. So, you know, it helped a lot. And in fact, we were able to improve some schedules, too, because obviously if the players had gone to the Olympics, March and April were packed months for a lot of teams, and we were able to move some of those games from March and April into this window to kind of balance it a little more. And I think ultimately, you know, we made the best of a tough situation.
Has there been a point in the last week maybe where you woke up and you were able to go, okay, this is going to be a good day? Have we turned that corner yet?
That's a good question. Actually, this past weekend, I thought we were there, and then I ended up on the phone all day on Saturday, dealing with one COVID-related situation with faulty testing that was going on in one of our markets, and you know, 11 people tested positive, which was weird. Mm-hmm. Particularly given where we are in the progression, and then we were dealing with a postponement because of weather in the New York area, and having to reschedule that game. And we had already established the All-Star break, and the players on one particular team very unhappy because they had booked their vacations non-refundable, or leaving a certain day, et cetera. So it ended up being a challenging weekend when I didn't expect it to be.
So who do you have to talk to? Can as much as you can, you're allowed to walk through that process. People be fascinated by the little layers of trying to reschedule or pump another game in.
Yeah, so on the rescheduling end and on the postponement end, obviously I make sure the commissioner's aware of everything we're doing and why we're doing it. And, you know, sometimes he has different ideas and good ideas, and we reassess. But for the most part, he's been really, really good, supportive of what our doctors are telling us. Obviously, what our scheduling guy, Steve Hatzepetros, who's been tremendous over a two-year period now in terms of juggling all he has to juggle. And then it's really left to me to have to deal with the clubs and let them know, you know, what's going on and why. Again, the clubs have been enormously cooperative throughout this process, and it doesn't go without errors being made and traps being missed occasionally. But you know, our managers have been very flexible and lenient in understanding what's going on and being supportive of what we're trying to do.
Must be hard for managers when they're talking to you not to put their own club's interests in front of everything else. Like, we're all competitive in our own nature, and they're looking, going, I don't care if they have 12 players out. We want to play this game. We're hot.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly right, and I get more of those for the games that we do end up moving. We get competitive calls saying, well, why'd you cancel this game and not my game? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, there was only 7 players instead of 9 players. And you know what? Each situation is totally different, and you have to weigh all the various factors, starting with the medical considerations first and foremost. But this year, as opposed to last year, where I think medical was much more weighty in terms of being a real concern about players being sick, this year it was kind of numbers, it was schedule, it was the ability to reschedule. You know, all of those kind of factors kind of played into the decisions that were made, and some clubs, you know, they're super competitive, as I expect them to be, and they don't like how those decisions are made sometimes, but we do the best we can, and we got through it.
Are you relieved or excited to be here in All-Star Weekend in Las Vegas?
I think both. Yeah. I think both. Clearly relieved that we got here. and I was looking for a little respite in what we've all been dealing with for a long time. And I think, you know, we've been able to build in a long enough All-Star break that I think even the players feel like it's a break they can get recharged in. And, you know, look, we've been looking forward to, you know, All-Star in Vegas for a long time now. And it's perhaps one of the most unique and best cities to have an event like this. And, you know, it's a shame that we're still kind of in the pandemic and that a lot of people are missing it because of that. But, you know, we'll be back. And you know, the people who are here are going to enjoy a fabulous weekend.
Did you have any trouble convincing the players?
Not All-Star.
Because their buy-in's been pretty good.
By the way, 100, you know, we have tough years.
Yeah.
And people thought, particularly with the pandemic, with the fact that we didn't go to the Olympics, that players would be resistant. I think we're fortunate in some respects that it's in Vegas, because I think players, by and large, love coming to Vegas. So I think that helped us. And, yeah, the buy-in has been really, really good. Give the players a lot of credit for that. I give the Players Association a lot of credit for that, because I think there was leadership there. I think everybody's excited about the weekend.
Are you a Vegas guy?
I'm a big Vegas guy.
Yeah?
Big Vegas
guy.
I've always
been
a supporter of this franchise. No, from way back, I thought it would be successful. It has been enormously successful. But my wife and I love to come to Vegas a couple of times a year, you know, 2 or 3 nights, and really kind of enjoy ourselves. And so my wife in particular, who was with me for All-Star, loves having lots of people around who she can show the sights to. So it's been fun so far for me. It's a little more work. You know, I've had meetings all day long today. I have meetings all day tomorrow. I even have a meeting on Sunday or Saturday morning before the game. So it's work until the buzzer goes off,
like a busier
on Saturday week, afternoon.
Busy All-Star weekend than normal for you?
No, it's all the same. and you look at the inside of meeting rooms as opposed to outside. But all friends and family and all our business partners and everybody, they love being here. So it'll be a huge success for us. Steve Mayer and his team, Dean Matsuzaki and his team, done a fabulous job. And we've gotten nothing but great cooperation from the Vegas Golden Knights. Bill Foley and George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon and fabulous hosts.
Are you back to being able to watch sort of with enjoyment without worrying, though?
Yep.
That's positive.
Yep.
What about the fans and your reaction to or commentary on their coming back to the game?
So I think for the most part, our fans are thrilled that we're back and that we're playing a full season. We're down a little bit attendance-wise, but particularly in the United States, you know, Canada has its own issues, which we talked about a little bit before we got on air. But the United States, the attendance has been trending up. We're a couple points off where we would normally be.
You surprised at that?
Not at all. Not at all.
Really? I thought it would take longer, just from a health and safety standpoint.
So but, I'm surprised the opposite way. I'm surprised that we're not more behind.
We're on the same page.
Than what I expected to be. We're basically at 90% of capacity in our U.S. venues, which is tremendous.
That's incredible.
Think about it, yeah. So we're pleased. We finished the board meeting. We told our governors and the media and the world that we were projecting about $5.2 billion in revenues this year, which was would be a record year for the league. The Canadian issues are going to cut that down a bit, but not by major amounts. I mean, there are those doomsayers who like to suggest HRR is going to be way down because of what we've seen over the last month and a half. It's not. We're going to be fine. We're going to have a very successful season financially. I think the game on the ice continues to be as good as it's been ever. And I'm looking for an exciting finish, particularly in the Western Conference.
On the HRR front, I have to ask you about Arizona. What's the update on that as far as looking for a place to play? We've heard the ASU rumors, but...
So, I mean, obviously they need a place to play next year. They're looking at their various options. Gila River Arena has said they don't want the Coyotes playing there next year. So we have to take them at the word, and that's a reality. So they're looking at their options, and we're working with them. We want to be supportive of them. We want to be supportive of the fans in the Arizona community. It's a work in progress, but ASU is a possibility.
I was surprised there wasn't a minimum attendance.
Well, I mean, as a practice
for a building,
usually there is, right? But desperate times produce desperate measures, and if you're looking to sustain the franchise over long term, I mean, Alex Morello and his team have a plan to build an arena in Tempe, and they expect that the process, knowing whether it's a go or not go, will be done in the next couple months. We certainly hope it's a go. We think it's a home run, empty netter for the club if it is. But we have to get from here to there. So you have to be practical in terms of how you approach that. And that's how we're approaching it.
Nobody's ever had your job. Like, you're the only person that... It's kind of cool.
I mean, look, I think over time, nobody's had the commissioner's job either, right?
True.
He was the first commissioner in our history. So I think it's really just a title. I'm sure there were people who did, kind of the same scope and level of work that I do for Gary and for the league. They just weren't called deputy commissioners.
What do you know now that you didn't know 3 years into your job? Or what are you better at handling?
Your podcast is not long enough for me to list all those things. Look, I think I know a lot more now. I think it makes my job easier. I think it makes my job more fun every day. I feel like I've seen it and know how to handle it in ways because we've seen it before. And that's Gary says this all the time. It's one of his favorite sayings. When we're dealing with clubs, it's not that we're smarter than anybody else, but we see it 32 different ways over a course of 25 years. You bank a book of knowledge, and it's a playbook that you can go back to and reuse from time to time. And sometimes you know what hasn't worked, you know what does work, or what can work. And so, that's where I feel like we are. I think we're in a good spot. Gary is, I think, his 29th anniversary just happened. So he'll be 30 years next year, and I just hit my 25th anniversary. So we've been working together for a long time. We work well together.
Why does it work between you guys as teammates?
A number of reasons. I think we have different personalities, but I think in some respects that really benefits the way we work together. He'll have a different set of initial reactions to certain things than I will. We compare notes and come up with the best course. And obviously, he makes a decision. The buck stops at his desk, not mine. But I can tell you that my experience with Gary over 25 years now is that he's one of the best. And people wouldn't know this about him and probably wouldn't suspect it about him, but he's one of the best listeners I know. And when I feel strongly about something, he really takes that into consideration, and I think it has an effect on his thinking. So, you know, that's what makes him an effective leader, and he has been. So we have a very good relationship. He actually didn't know I was doing this podcast, so he called me like 3 minutes ago. I think he just got to Vegas. But I wasn't able to pick up because it's too loud in here, so I'll get him after.
Don't tell him you're with me, though, because I want to take the blame for that. When you forecast then down the road, what's next? Like, or do you go back to what was working before? You were Beijing, you were in China, you were doing all the internationals. Do you start there and then?
Well, no, I think, you know, look, I think first and foremost, we realize that, you know, we're not back to normal yet. As much as we'd like to be, we're not there yet. So we still have to get to there and then move from there. Having said that, the fact that we've been in a pandemic for 2 years hasn't stopped us from continuing to want to grow the game and innovate in the game in ways, you know, that we haven't before, and ways we probably wouldn't have without the pandemic. And, you know, whether that's, you know, ads on jerseys or ads on helmets or digitally enhanced dashboards, which I expect, you know, will be utilized league-wide starting next year, or player and puck tracking. All those things have continued to evolve and develop and we put into place during a very difficult time. And I think creating those new revenue streams in particularly in these times, has been very important for our clubs, and I think, you know, harkens to a time in the future where, you know, those revenue streams will be unencumbered in a way they haven't been to this point. So, I think the future is bright. I mean, I, you know, Gary says this all the time. Totally agree with him. It starts with the product on the ice, and you know, product on the ice has never been better for us. Competitive balance in our league has never been better. You know, our system is sound and is working. Our relationship with the Players Association is as good as it's ever been. You know, we need to continue to innovate and look for ways to continue to grow the game. And you know, I think there will be an increased emphasis on international opportunities, whether that's us bringing games over there or best-on-best competition in the Olympics and in the World Cup. And you know, we've already broached that subject and had our preliminary meetings with the Players Association, so that's kind of up and running and kind of full speed ahead. So, you know, everything's looking good.
Best-on-best within the next Olympic cycle before
Italy? I would think so.
Yeah.
I would think so. Yep.
That's
certainly the hope.
Any specific dates? Not month to month, but
the two possibilities. Well, I mean, the first thing we have to decide is really where we want to put it during the calendar. And, you know, there's always been two possibilities. And as you know, we've always put the Canada Cup and the World Cup right before training camp starts, really coterminous with training camp to some extent. And, you know, there's always been that, you know, question out there, should we move it to February? Should we move it to the normal Olympic period? That's something that's been, you know, that we've never decided to do. But I think, particularly given the fact that we didn't go to the Olympics this year, it's a real consideration for us next time around. So I would think, you know,
seems like a shift to me.
Certainly a possibility of kind of a mid-season World Cup in the near future.
Do you have a favorite player? Are you allowed to have a favorite player or a player that you must tune in?
Well, I admire, as you would expect me to say, I admire kind of all the skilled players in our league, really all the players in the league, because what they've done to get to the National Hockey League by itself is a tremendous accomplishment. But, you know, if you're asking me as I'm sitting here right now, you know, what I've been truly kind of amazed by is, you know, the performance of Alexander Ovechkin. Mm-hmm. at age 36 and coming out and performing as well as he's performed and as energetically as he's performed. It's a real shame. He obviously isn't here because of COVID. And he was traveling family members over from Russia to be here. So he was actually excited, very excited about the All-Star break and being in Vegas. And so it's unfortunate he's not here. But what he's done is tremendous. Obviously, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, yeah. Right there with him, Jonathan Huberdeau, and what the Florida Panthers have been able to do over the last 2 years, and Bill Zito's leadership is tremendous. So there's great stories. There's always great stories. There's always great players. It's what makes the league fun.
Can you put a marketing value on what Ovi's doing to captivate the attention of a sports fan?
Yeah, I think. I don't value it myself, but there are people who I think try to value it for sure. And as you would imagine, it's incredible because I think it's caught people's imagination. Right? They're like, how can somebody who looks older now play the way he plays every night and really without injury, right? He's gone almost his entire career without any serious injuries. Which is the way he plays the game, very physically, is really a wonder. Right? So I do think, and the fact that he came out of the gates as strong as he did this year and set 29 goals and in the top five in scoring in the league, I think it's captured people's imagination. I think that's great for us.
This has been awesome. I could literally sit here and talk to you all day because. One, we haven't seen each other for a long time, and two, it's so interesting. You'll be handing out the trophies again in the conference finals.
I expect to be. Yes, I expect to be. And this time, last year, we really even debated whether we would give conference championship trophies because there weren't conferences last year. So it was a very unique year. Ultimately, it was the organizations and the players who wanted the trophies, so we acceded to that. I think our leaning was to forego the trophies at all, for the year, last year, and it was the organizations and the teams who wanted us to award them. So I think we're back to normal this year. We'll have an Eastern Conference and a Western Conference, and it'll be more traditional.
Look forward to great things ahead, and if there's a best on best in a couple of years, the Olympics, etc., but we get to do it in person like this. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Darren.
Continuing on from Fanfare in Las Vegas, it's the NHL All-Star Weekend 2022. We start with the Deputy Commissioner because we got to get all the news and notes and the dirt out of the way, and then we kind of filter into the buddies. Like, I like Bill.
Bill's
haven't seen
man.
Him for a while. Bill's a really good guy, but here's the Senior Vice President of Hockey Operations, Chris King, and... You're more my buddy.
Why?
I actually had to ask you what your title was because I don't know what your title is. Because I
you
just
don't care.
I just
you're my
go,
friend. You
yeah,
know?
I don't think of you as a big shot with the National Hockey League.
Let's get this out yeah. now. Like, why am I only getting on now? And
ask Bob. Ask Bob. I've been asked.
Bob, why am I just getting on now?
Because I've asked for you to be on this show for 5 years, even though it's only been around for two.
Yeah, that's
how
true.
Long I've been asking for you to be on the show.
Yeah,
it's.
Well, it's good to be on. So is this a 5 minute?
So it's 3.5 minutes.
Okay.
Okay, so
let's talk about me.
One of the first things that and Chris King used to play in the National Hockey League, and now he works for the National Hockey League. You were a captain in the National Hockey League, King Clancy
yeah,
Award
my
winner.
Yeah, trophy's right over there.
Did you ever go look? Did you go look at your name on
I
it?
Will on the way out.
Yeah, get a picture. Send it to your granddaughter.
Look at me.
You've been around the game a long time, but I first crossed paths with you in Winnipeg. You would come on the old Sportsline program and be our, a playoff analyst for us
that
for
was
three
cool.
and a half minutes.
That
yeah.
was really cool. That got me right out. Well, actually, did I enjoyed that. I actually really did. Joe, right?
Yeah.
And
Gene Principe?
Gene and
Ron Kuipers?
Was Lisa Bose on that?
Lisa Bose was at the other station.
So who was
Caroline
it?
Caroline
Corey. That's
yeah.
it. Yeah. yeah, no, it was good. I enjoyed that. And that was my time when I did enjoy TV. And then I actually went to work with Coolius for a bit.
Right,
and hated
score.
TV.
And yeah.
that's why I'm in this part of the job.
Well, you didn't get to talk with Coolius.
No, who does?
No, he's perfect.
Actually, he was wild. That was a fun time. I had just retired mid-season in Chicago, and They had asked me to come on and do some Leaf games, and then I think it was the World Championship or something going on then. So I was doing something there, and then Cooley just tired me out. I couldn't do it anymore.
Christine Gosher, who is married to our play-by-play voice, Dave Gosher, on TV. You know the broadcast teams more than anybody because of your job. But she was talking about Coolius and what a great job he does. And I said, he's the perfect guy for that job.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We had him as MC on one of my celebrity cruises up in Muskoka. And there was a Leaf book that had come out. And he invited people up. There's 200 people on board. And he'd invite people up. And he'd say, open up a page. And he was ever on that page, say their name. And he was on the mic. And then Charlie Conacher, whoever, you know, born here this year, had this many points, and like just ridiculous. Like his memory of the Leafs is wild, but he's got a lot of energy.
I was at the IRS the other day, and they asked me the birthday of my daughter, and I had to ask. So
did you not have your phone on you?
I couldn't do it. Coolius does.
No.
Do you think of yourself as a Maple Leaf, because you played for the Maple Leafs, a New York Ranger, because that's kind of where you broke in, or a Winnipeg Jet, where you were a captain?
I'm from small town Northern Ontario in Hornpain, and town of 800 people, so I grew up small town, and small town NHL when I played was Winnipeg, and more so was the people, and you know, going there when I did, just after Christmas, and even though Ty came with me, it was still a good time, you know. We had some fun times there, and I just really kind of moved into the community and really enjoyed myself, and as you said, was able to be captain of an NHL team, and I played almost 4 years there, and that's probably the team that I associate my career with the most.
Do you miss being a fan? Or are you allowed to be a fan?
I don't miss being a fan. I am a fan.
You are a fan?
I'm a huge fan.
Okay, so people that don't know, like Chris, basically you and Mike Murphy and Coley. Coley's not in the room at night.
Actually, you'd be surprised how many times Coley's in there. And if he's not, he's on Zoom and he's watching us. He has a camera. And if we have a challenge, he's got the camera on that challenge. Like he's there. Like,
Colin Campbell's got a little Zoom thing.
He's got a camera, and it scans the room. Have you been in our room?
My sabbatical year,
that's
you brought me in a couple
of
times, and I learned so much through that. Thank you.
But anyways, so he can talk to us, and he can move his camera and go on to the challenge, whichever game. Vegas has got a challenge in their game, and he's in real time. Like, he's watching what we're watching, and Kay Whitmore's part of our group, Rod Pasma, so I stole what you were saying, but no, we watch a lot of hockey games, and I'm just blown away by the talent of our younger players. I love the game of hockey, and you have to watch as many games as we do. You know, sometimes I go home at night after 10, 12 games, and I turn on the news and the sports to see who won, because literally you're just counting the games off the big board.
Yeah.
Because you just want to get through them. And then if there's a challenge or review or something, you just jump to it, right? And you make the call, because we have to do everything in real time. But you know the heavy nights, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturdays, and now with ESPN, and now they snuck a camera in our room. We got to actually kind of half-ass dress up now.
Did you guys get a memo on that?
We kind of did, but we,
dress code memo.
We just don't wear, you know, cut off t-shirts and muscle shirts anymore, you know, and we're not smoking in there anymore.
Yeah.
So
you still do. You just don't do it
just
in that room.
We do it off camera.
No.
So, no, you've been there. Things are happening quick, and we have to make the right call. And the good thing about it is the consistency that's involved of being the same guys making the same calls every night and having a retired official in there. I'm not going to lie, at the start was a little bit troublesome for us. We almost felt like they were kind of going to look over us But it's been great. Billy McCreary, Paul Dvorsky, Robbie Schick, Brad Watson now. They just come in there and they teach our viewers, our younger guys that are watching the games, about the game. And they enjoy it as well. It's nice when we get on the headset with the referees. You know, I generally run most of the challenges. And I say, hey, Runes and Kelly Sutherland, Kinger and Billy Mack here, what do you guys got? You
know, so
and they
go through if it. Challenge happens, say, let's walk through it. A goal takes place.
Yep.
And how do you get brought into it?
So let me see if I can visualize this. We have a room with a bridge, and we have workstations that consist of, I want to say, four 40-inch TVs, and we have 14 workstations. So every game is assigned to a viewer. And all of our viewers, we have three full-time guys. The rest are part-time guys, all played hockey at some level, NCAA, major, junior, semi-pro. They all have other jobs, but they work for us game nights. And they're in charge of that game and that game only. So they know really before the team knows they're going to challenge, because they know what they're looking for. They'll say, hey, listen, this is close. The goalie kind of got bumped here. They may want to take a look at this. They may challenge us. So I grab my headset, much the same as the one I've got on now. Billy will come with me. We'll go in behind that guy and look at it. And then we get a flash from Washington.
There's a light that...
A light flashes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's disco, man. We're on the headset. We can hear them talking. And let me say, then they announce the challenge, and we just go to work. And we say, hey, guys, here's what do you guys got for us? Because their call's important, whether they got goal or no goal. And then we'll take all of the views we have available to us, and we'll say, maybe you want to look at this. You know, maybe this guy got tripped up by the defenseman or got shoved in there. Or he went through the blue on his own and he caught his head. He might not on purpose, but enough to not allow the goalie to play his position. And they I'm not going to say they rejudge. They look to see if there's something they could have done different if they saw it again, which they do now with review. So it's been good for the game. I really believe that. You know, we don't overturn a ton unless it's completely wrong, because the mandate from our general managers is unless it's, if it's dead wrong, we leave it in most cases.
So you're still able to be a fan after all that?
But yeah, I love it. I love the game of hockey. I mean, I love playing it as a young...
Do you still play?
I haven't. With COVID's really kind of hurt us north, you know. Yeah. Gartsy's game has kind of started up, and then it's kind of been forced to not be played. They're playing now Mondays.
That's Mike Gartner at the NTR rink in Newmarket.
Yeah, Luch won't drive me anymore, so I don't go. I get Mondays off, so I usually go home Sunday night and push snow around for a while. But no, I'm going to start playing here. I think we're opening up in the next couple weeks. So we're going to probably start playing again in probably the end of February.
What's the hardest call to judge if you review it? Is it goalie interference?
We thought it would be stick? No,
is
it's offside.
What?
You would think it's black and white. Like,
I thought
of course,
offside would be the easy one.
But there's so many layers to offside as far as.
And thank you for saying offside and not offsides.
Oh, I get so mad when some of the broadcasters say offside. Bobby Bender says offsides all the time.
Yeah.
Bobby.
Yeah.
But no, it's. When it was foot in the air, it was tough, right? And we'd be waiting and waiting. But you got to remember, too, we're at the mercy of the replays, right? So. We've gotten a lot better with our broadcasters because they know. Now they listen. Okay, we're going to challenge offside. Well, I better get them better looks than they have. The blue line cameras have helped. We have now better blue line cameras. But this foot in the air just for challenges has really made things easier, and the players are getting it. Like, you'll see them flying down there and sticking their leg way back. But, you know, when you used to have to drag, it was tough. But, yeah, we've had some really close ones that have been really, really hard to judge. The goalie interference ones, it's either they are or they aren't. And we thought the goalies would really embellish this a lot, and some are really good at it. And I'm not going to lie, a referee will get on and say, I told this guy twice not to sell this, which kind of, you know, can kind of lead us one way or the other. Same thing if we got a player that he said, hey, listen, I told this guy to get out of the crease three times tonight. So he went there again. I'm not giving him the benefit of the doubt. So we don't get to see that on TV or hear that on TV. So the actually having the referees on the headset is very important to the final call.
Should broadcasters know the rule book better?
Absolutely. Start with Gary Lawless. Holy cow. I'm just kidding. No. The good thing is now, he's going to kill me. You guys do a great job, by the way.
You can't kiss my ass now.
I'm not kissing your ass. I'm kissing his. Lolly and I go way, way back. Even
you
before
do, Peterborough, you, right?
Yeah, he was working at the Peterborough Memorial Center as a ticket taker when I was playing there. And Lolly was great because he went to one of the other schools.
Oh.
So when we were still, you know, young guys at Pete's and going to Thomas A. Stewart, he knew all the girls at the other school, so he was kind of our in-between guy. You know? We want to meet some cool guys. Right? But Lolly's a good man. We go way back. When he went to Winnipeg,
that's Gary
that was
Lawless.
Kind of fun. Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, but there are guys that do their homework, and they're really good. They'll call us on rules. Having the comm system directly to, I was talking to Panger last night a lot.
You were,
because he was doing the TNT game, yeah. And he'll ask questions. And listen, if they're giving their fans the wrong information, then it's not good for the game, right? Yeah. And generally, there are guys that are the old, you know, you can't see me, but the homers, right? Yeah. That doesn't matter what we tell them, they're gonna spin it the way they want for their own team. But we just want them to get the right word out. And having we've done a really lot of work with our officials to announce better and tell the people in the building what actually they're looking at or why they made the decision. And we're going to continue to do that. Steven's been really good with that. We didn't know if our guys would be comfortable with it, but there's some guys that really do a great job. And we don't want to not let the people know exactly why we ruled one way or the other. We blast everything out to the media, too, when we make a decision. And we try to give as much information as we can.
If there's a challenge in a game that I'm doing, how long do I respectfully have to wait before I text you or call you?
You should be right away.
Really?
I try
and give you a little bit of...
You know that I'm going to make the right call there.
Oh, I know you're going to make the right call, but I don't want to bother you because I want an explanation.
Yeah. No, Lolly pretty much has already got the thing written before it happens. What was that? Is that a headshot? I said, wrong department.
Yeah. No.
No, but no, that we want to get the right message across, and we all have our people, right? Mm-hmm. You're my people. Gary's my people. There's people I played with, people in the business. Eddie O and I talk a lot on game nights, and they want to just get the right word out because
they want to sound
educated, and they know what's going on in the game. And if you do make a mistake, and then it's proven that you actually didn't see it right, then you've got to kind of eat it a little bit, right? And, I think Cassie Campbell still owes our room a case of beer.
Because, really?
Yeah, she was wrong on an offside thing, and she couldn't get it. And, I mean, she played pro for so long in the Olympics, and you just, like, when I talk about how hard offside, it was one of the ones where the puck went over, the player was over, but there was a tag up.
The tag up screw everybody
up. Well, that's it. And the player touched the puck while the guy was just tagged. And she couldn't get it.
Yeah.
And she actually she admitted the fact publicly on TV about a game later, and she said, I owe those guys something up in the video room.
So. I liken that, compare that to the new math.
Yeah.
And then my daughter will eventually teach me the new math. And then I'm like, well, it is easy.
I'm so glad my kids are out of school.
But I don't get it. And then I get it. Yeah. If you played with Mats, can you believe it's been that long since that team's won a, like, what the city's missing, what those players are missing out on? Because you went through some pretty good runs with the Leafs.
We had good teams. You know, the first year was interesting. Mike Murphy was my coach and my neighbor.
Funny did you get heat for that?
Oh, geez. You think Ty had anything to say about that? No, but the funny thing was, I mean, we go...
Ty doesn't listen to my podcast. I can safely say that Ty does not listen to my podcast.
He and I
have had enough battles.
Yeah. No, but we've been to Toronto hundreds of times. I live 2 hours north in Muskoka. So when Paul and I went looking for a place to live, we were with a realtor, and we went around Aurora because Mike's brother at the time, who was the coach of Leafs, who I'd never met before, was a Catholic school principal. So he was showing us some schools, which was very important to Paul at the time. And we looked at this one house. It hadn't even had a sign on it, and it had just come on that day. And we went to lunch, and she had kept the key in her pocket instead of putting it back in the box by mistake. So we decided, you know what, that's a house we like. We're going to buy that house. I had never owned a house in the NHL. We'd always rented because I was always on 1 or 2 year deals, right? As a fourth line left winger, very underused and underpaid.
Unappreciated.
Thank you very much. Yeah. We went back to that house and we bought it that night. And as it turned out, there was like five people who wanted to look at that house, but it was right beside Mike Murphy's house. Like literally.
When did you figure out that was your
when
coach
I went
lived
to,
next door?
3 days later, my in-laws were from Peterborough. We were at the cottage. I said, why don't we pick you up and we'll go show you the house we're going to buy. And we were driving down the street with my father-in-law in the back. And and my mother-in-law, and my father-in-law goes, that guy looks like Mike Murphy, coach the Leafs, running up the street. So I kind of slow down, undoor the window. I said, hey, Mike Murphy. He goes, yeah. I said, Chris King. He says, hey, we just signed you. I said, yeah, and I just bought that house right there. He goes, holy cow. He says, we're neighbors. That's not going to be good. And I said, it could be good for me. You need a ride to the rink. But, no, Terry Simpson was our coach. Mike Kitchen and Mike Murphy, they all lived in Aurora. And Wendell and I lived up there. And so Clarky and I rode in together every day, real early, because Clarky was on the table for an hour and a half, 2 hours, trying to get ready to go on the ice. That's when his neck and back were really bad. But him and I fought 6-8 times, and here we are riding to the rink, and then we signed Cujo.
Would you ever talk about your fights?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Well, Clarky was my mom's favorite player next to me. So we're in Winnipeg one game. We're playing Toronto, and Clarky, we line up, and he goes, so are we fighting tonight? And I go, well, actually not. My mom and dad are in town, and she just told me I wasn't allowed to fight you. And he goes, ah, come on. I said, no, I'm serious. You won't let me fight tonight. And he goes, okay. So second period comes out. He goes, why don't you bring your mom down? Because, you know, where the visiting room was down the stairs. And that's, I want you to come down after the game. I'll say hello to her. So I went to the wise room, got my mom, went over. Clarky, my mom, had a nice chat. Well, I stood there like an idiot, leaning on the wall. And it was kind of cool. But, so we spent a lot of time together. And then we signed Cujo. Yeah. And I drove him to the rink every day. And then after my fourth year, Pat Quinn called me in and Ken Dryden said, we're going to buy you out. And I said, you can't. He said, what do you mean you can't? I said, Cujo doesn't know where the rink is. I pick him up every morning. He falls asleep before we leave the driveway. And he wakes up when we get to the friggin' Maple Leaf Gardens. So, yeah, so anyways, we had a lot of fun in Toronto. But, yeah, winning in Toronto is unequaled anywhere, you know. But they're good. I mean, they're good. They got a good chance. They just got to win the big games, you know.
Yeah.
That Jack Campbell kid's a good kid, boy. He's hilarious. He's hilarious. We were testing the pucks this summer up in Muskoka. John Tavares had a skate. And he had like a team building thing. And he had 14 of his teammates at his cottage, and they all had their own room. But so we're testing the new tracking pucks.
Their own room.
And so Rod Pasma and I were out back waiting for them to come. We wanted to talk to some guys, especially Spetsa, you know, because Spetsa's a good guy. Jack Campbell comes out and he's like, da di da di da. Hey, what's up, guys? And he said, hey, what are you doing here? He said, oh, we were testing the tracking box. He goes, you got one? I said, yeah. He throws it on. He goes, hey, what's these dots in here? He said, oh, they're kind of sensors. He goes, oh, pretty cool. Can I keep it? He said, yeah, Jack, have it. No problem. He goes, thanks for helping out. Hey, no problem, guys. See you later. You know? I was like, all right. I see why everybody loves this guy.
Are those expensive, those pucks?
Well, you want one?
No.
Cheap. They're probably.
But one goes into the stands, and you're like, you're not getting it back.
Actually, the reason that we actually put the trackers in because the referees would steal them all, so now we know who's stealing them, whose pocket they're in. No, but actually, they're using some cool pucks in the skills competition that light up. Our tracking pucks light up. Yeah, not to give that out there. But this is taped, anyway.
Yeah.
So
this will never get out.
They're a little bit more expensive.
Just between you and I.
They're a little bit more expensive.
I just wear
expensive.
The headset for fun.
They're a little bit more expensive than the other ones. But, yeah, no, they're about $45-$50.
You know everybody. Like, who are we?
That's you're Patrice.
Just, I know, but you're, like, waving everybody. This is the 50th person that's walked by.
This is one of my favorite people in the NHL.
You literally know 200 people that have walked by, and I live here. I don't know anybody.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll introduce you to a few people later. No, this is we're one big happy family at the NHL. So she's looking at me because I don't have my mask on. She's in HR.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, she's not.
It's one of those masks. Before we let you
Darren said, you know everybody. And I said, she's just looking at me because I don't have my mask on.
Good. How are you?
Well, yeah.
This is live and interactive. This is great. This is exactly what it's supposed to be.
You're next.
How's Paula and the kids? Oh. Like we got Seattle, we got a king
listen,
in Seattle. We
listen,
got
and like you. I'm a grandpa, right? Mm-hmm. You know that. And
like I thought of grandpas, you don't look like a grandpa.
Paula doesn't look like a grandpa.
No,
but it's just everybody saying, "Oh, wait till your grandpa," and I'm like, "Yeah." Now I am. It's like, "Oh yeah." She just brightens my day. She's so funny. She's like my daughter, just like. 30 years later, pain in my butt, but hilarious. Paul and I love seeing her. We don't see her enough. But Paul is great. She's doing good. She's happy. Pickleball's open again. So She can play with all her cronies.
Have you given up tennis for pickleball?
Oh, no, I like tennis. But I can't play tennis in the winter. I like pickleball, too. But I actually won the pickleball championship in the Edmonton bubble, Dean Matuszaki and I.
You played doubles in the bubble?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we did for 2 months. Yeah, no, we have a trophy and everything. I got a picture of the Stanley Cup and the pickleball trophy right side by side. But
King Clancy.
And the King Clancy. But Eric's doing great. You good. Mentioned Seattle. Yeah. He's having a ride out there. Everybody's good. King family's great. And yours is too. I know.
Yeah.
I know. Jen's mad. I missed
We dropped a phone in the toilet today, though.
You did?
No, my 14-year-old.
Oh.
Yeah, so we got to go deal
with that
today.
Well, that's one way to get it. That's one way to get a 13, right?
Well, that's exactly what happened. Don't think
Paula did it too.
Yeah.
It's not unique to Vegas.
I'm really sorry, Dad.
Yeah, right.
There it goes. Right. I do wish Bill I hadn't seen for 2 years. You haven't seen in person, but we do talk quite a bit.
Yeah, I know.
But this is way better.
Well, let's do it again.
Okay. Like, Bob, can he come back on again? Bob says thumbs up.
Not right now, Bob. I'm busy, but maybe when you're sitting in your closet at home doing it. You still do that?
Yeah. Well, it's an office. I took over the playroom.
Yeah, it's an office in the closet.
Yeah. I got all my masks up. And
hey, you ever see Heels do his PA
no.
meetings? He's in the basement. And he doesn't
He won't
it.
Text.
No, but he's got all the insulation, you know, the pink star and plastic over it.
No.
And bulging out. And then all these dance trophies from his girls behind him. And we're on a meeting last week with the commissioner, the OPP, because we do the mental health initiative. Yeah. And here's Hills, you know, with all these dance trophies. And I'm like, oh, man.
And doesn't care.
No. Hills doesn't care about anything. That's why he's done such
Zero.
A good job.
Have you ever had
him on?
Had him on about 5 years
ago. It's incredible what he's done for our Alumni Association.
Yeah.
It's.
You ever hear the story about Pat Quinn trying to pull Cooge? And put him in, but he was in Dallas where he sat in a different area.
Yeah.
And somebody went down and said, you got to go in, and he said he refused.
Yeah, I was in that game. Usually I was sitting beside him because Pat never played me and never played him.
But he refused to go in.
That's why we're such good friends. We talked all game long. I was the stopper.
the bumper between the defenseman and the forwards?
No, between the backup goalie and the defenseman and then the forwards. I was that far down.
Yeah. George McPhee's standing by.
I saw George over there.
And George is my boss now, so I have to let you go.
George is a hell of a lot tougher than I am, too.
He could go.
Sneaky tough.
Yeah.
Sneaky tough. And when George was a GM, I always didn't want to do that series.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Can I tell him that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we actually got along really well.
Yeah, I liked that.
George has done some wonderful stuff out here.
Had a great
moment. Him and Kelly have done a great job.
Yeah, it's awesome. We have a lot of fun here. Will you come back and visit us like when we're not busy?
Yeah.
So we can go for a ride
Now that I'm allowed to come on, I should probably come on like every week. Well, Kinger's Corner.
Bob's giving me Kinger's Corner. Yeah. We got a new segment.
Yeah. Updates from Muskoka.
Thanks, buddy.
Okay, Paul. You coming up to Muskoka this summer?
I won't get up to Muskoka this summer.
Okay,
I'm
going
to go back out to PEI.
Oh,
I haven't been there for 3 years.
I haven't been to your place since you got the new place, right?
Right, when you got stung by a bee.
Oh, my God. That's
that was a Hockeyville.
That's the biggest hornet's nest in the side of a bank I've ever seen. Your neighbor didn't quite like the fact that we just kind of walked in and helped ourselves.
We got a couple of issues with the neighbors.
Yeah, well,
they're not real happy with us.
It's not a surprise.
I'll fill you in later.
All
but
right,
it's
let's do it next
it's not
week.
Going yeah, next on next week's episode.
Next week's episode, we'll talk about Darren's old neighbors.
There's Chris King with us on the Chirp. George McPhee standing by. Next.
This was fun, bud.
This is awesome.
Thank you, Paul.
We were just talking about the president of hockey operations with the Vegas Golden Knights. And Chris King said he was scared or didn't want to do any series that you were the general manager of as as we bring in George McPhee on the Chirp podcast. He said, I would just stay away. I didn't want anything to do with George because he said you were too tough.
No, I don't think it's that because that guy was tough. I think it's just I get wound up and might throw something and somebody who knows.
I actually asked him. I said, "Can I mention that to George?" He goes, "Oh yeah, tell him that." I was petrified. Maybe not petrified. Hey, we're at All Star, the Fanfare 2022, part one of the Chirp podcast at this All Star weekend, and I was talking to a couple of different people with the league, George, and they said, "Well, they would have loved to have come to Vegas when it was like full-on wide-open, hopping crazy like Vegas is, this is the perfect time to come to Vegas because the players want to come. They've all bought in, and the fans are excited to be here. So it's really, well, you're not high point to Vegas terms, it's still great.
Oh, it sure is. Players always want to come here, which is nice, and fans want to come here. I'm amazed at the number of people that are walking around with jerseys from other teams. Like, people have come from other cities, and they've got their jerseys on, and they're walking around this convention hall, and it's kind of neat. But you're right. It was the right time for this because, you know, there's no capacity limits in our arena, and you know, we're going to host the skills competition and do all these things, and they'll be really well attended. And it looks good on the league to be able to do that.
You've spent some time in some really solid NHL cities, Vancouver and Washington. Are you a Vegas guy now?
Well, yeah. We finally sold our home in Washington.
Oh, you did? Yeah, I did not know that.
About 4 months ago, and we're here. I really, really enjoy it here. I love that hockey is thriving in this market. You know, we've got the VGK and the HSK. You know, we had one team in two facilities, now two teams in four facilities. And the way that, you know, youth hockey is growing and what we're doing at the grassroots level, you know, I think we came here, we had our first year about 800 people in the state playing hockey, and now we're over 4,000, and most of them are under 8 years old. So, boys and girls playing, and adults playing, and so it's become a fantastic hockey market, a fantastic place to live and work.
What do you attribute the growth to? Because they've always had some form, or at times, minor professional hockey here. So there's been teams around here, but yep, not like this exponential explosion.
Well, you have to have enough rinks, and now we have four more rinks in addition to what was already here, and we put a lot of resources into it to teach and to provide ice time and equipment and get these kids going. So you know, we think that once you introduce them and they get going, then it's something they're going to want to play, and so we're delighted with the way it's gone so far. We've got a long way to go, but it's been like everything else around here. It's we put a lot into it, and we're reaping the benefits right now.
I don't know that I'm allowed to say this, but I will. You got down here about 2 hours before this conversation, and you're walking around.
Yep.
You've seen all of this. You've been around all the trophies. You've experienced everything in hockey, but you still took 2 hours to walk around Fanfare. What? Why?
You know, it's just going to be a neat weekend to be able to do this sort of thing and be a fan. You know, don't really have any obligations, commitments here this weekend other than to enjoy it. So I wanted to come down and be that hockey fan that all of us have always been. That's always been in there. So to go look at the trophies, to look at the legends, to look at the jerseys, to listen to, you know, Cujo over there and Lawless. It's a really neat thing to experience. I haven't been to an All-Star game in a while, and it, you know, we're really happy it's here. So I'm just enjoying it and look forward to, you know, bringing my daughter to the skills competition tomorrow and to the game and everything else. So.
What's your favorite event?
I like watching the guys in the fastest skater stuff. They're just so genetically gifted, and then they've trained on top of that, and they've, you know, they're just you know, to be able to do that on this little blade is pretty amazing. So I'm looking forward to watching that.
Who's your favorite player when you were growing up?
Well, without a doubt, Bobby Orr, Bobby Clark, those guys for sure. I think that you know, Orr,
different players.
Yeah, Orr revolutionized the game, as we all know, and just did some amazing things for a defenseman. Bob Clark, I've always admired his tenacity and his leadership. Just an incredible hockey guy. Even enjoyed, you know, talking to him as a manager when he was in Philly and I was in Washington. And then there's that other side, and you know, life is full of contradictions. And you know, I like Dave Schultz. You know,
yeah.
It was the Flyers were just different in those days, and he was something else. And so I liked him. But I, you know, we tried to do some different things here with Vegas Golden Knights and our uniforms and white gloves and, you know, the metallic helmets. And I think that all goes back to, you know, the Flyers used to try to do different things back in the day. And I remember meeting with Bob Clark, Kelly and I did, just to, you know, see if there's, you know, any takeaways that we could use. And he said, you know, make Vegas a place that everybody wants to play and try to be different. And so we have. We've been really aggressive in trying to build a really competitive team immediately. And it's the same thing he did when he had the Florida expansion team. And again, different things with the uniforms and the white gloves that people didn't think would work, and they worked just fine.
Now you don't even notice them. Like, yeah, you notice them, but it's fashionable.
Yeah, it's
and
part
LA
of our
LA takes the shiny helmets like Vegas has.
Yep, and you know, Buffalo had it last year for their 50th anniversary, sort of similar to what we did. So those are the guys I admired, you know, really, Orr and Clark, and again, sort of going back to meet with Clark again and try and help us build what we're trying to build here.
Now, Bob can talk a little too much, though. Like what he was talking a couple of weeks ago on a podcast, every now and then he throws stuff out there. He's feisty.
Yeah,
he's feisty to the end, isn't he?
Yeah, he's colorful and he can be controversial from time to time. And I would bet right now that he's not happy that he said those things. Mm. I remember getting a call from him once apologizing because we had the new rule where the referees were really calling the clutching and grabbing standard. They're trying to reduce all of that. And we went into Philly, and it was penalty after penalty after penalty. You know, they probably had 9 power plays. They beat us 7-2. And he called to apologize. He said, I don't ever want to embarrass a team like that. And I don't like these rules. And unfortunately, you guys just paid a price. So I think if you know Bob Clark a little bit, you like him a lot and sure like the way he played.
He was my favorite player when I was a kid.
Wow.
Yeah, hands down, favorite player.
Well, you think about how he played, and I remember when he didn't have the puck on the back check, and he's pitchforking all the way back, skating as hard as a guy could skate, all the way back into his own zone. It was every shift. It was every game. Like, he just played that way all the time. And what a great example for the rest of the team. Like, he put that team on his shoulders, and they won a couple of cups, and it shows you the value of tremendous leadership.
Are you, as somebody who was the person that put this team together in the first year and had that remarkable run, are you in a position to put this year's team in the same caliber because of what they've encountered, injuries and COVID? Everybody's had COVID, but still, it's a fact of life. And because to me, there's some similarities between overcoming odds and adversity.
Yeah, I frankly hadn't looked at it that way. I felt that first year we took off and we just kept going. This year has been harder.
But pressure this year. There was no pressure the first year, was there?
No, there wasn't until I think after Christmas when we all thought we had a pretty good team and started thinking in a different way and felt pressure heading into the deadline to try and add a little bit more and that sort of thing. But this year has been hard. In the long run, it could be really good for us, but it's been hard. We just have been hurt so much. Everybody's dealt with COVID in different ways, but we've had so many injuries, as you know. Every time we get close and we're only down 2 players, we're suddenly the next game down 6, and we've been down 9 and 10, and the Henderson Silver Knights have been down 13. It's been crazy. But you get a better look at some of your prospects. They get to come up and play. You get to look at other guys on your team, on your current team, that move up in the lineup and play more than they have in the past. And it, I just think it makes them better players. So if we ever get healthy, I think it's a pretty damn good team.
You played for the two winningest coaches in college hockey.
Mm-hmm.
How are they the same? How are they different?
They were the same that they won a lot, but they were couldn't be more different. Ron Mason had his way of playing, and Jerry York has his way of playing, and all roads lead to Rome, right? You can do it different ways, and it was a great lesson for a couple of young guys like me and Brian McClellan, who we're both managing now, that you can get there in different ways.
Have you used that philosophy in the course of your career? Thinking differently, has that helped you think and look at different scenarios, maybe outside the box?
Yeah. In Washington, we, you know, at the one time had a really high-scoring team, really, a really entertaining team in that regard, but thought we, you know, we let Semin go as a free agent. It was time for a change, and he was a 40-goal guy. Thought we, you know, maybe we can get playing a little bit different and more defensive and better defensively. And I asked Bruce Boudreau to do that. You know, can you do that? And he did it midstream one season, and it worked. You know, we played just as well or better, playing a completely different style with the same players. So, open to trying different things and playing different ways.
Did you ever want to coach?
I really hadn't thought about it much. I did coach an American League game once, or a Central Hockey League game once. Tom Webster was our coach. He had a personal emergency. He had to leave. I had a broken thumb. Craig Patrick called and said, won't you just coach him tonight? And so we did, and really enjoyed it. And the takeaway for me from that was just make sure you play everybody. Make everybody feel like they're part of it. Make everybody feel important. And we rolled the lines, got everybody out there, and the team played really well. And what a great feeling that was.
Did you win?
We did. We did. We won 3-2. Johnny Van Biesbroek was in net, and Grant Ledyard was playing on defense. Steve Richmond was on defense, and Graham Nicholson. We had a pretty good team, but it was fun. But you know, in this business, that as fun as it can be sometimes, if you're not winning, it's the opposite. It's a tough way to live.
Your son Graham's playing professionally now. He played for Jerry.
He did.
What was that like, you having played for Jerry and then being a father of a person that was playing for Jerry?
What I really wanted most for Graham when he went off to college was to go to a good school, graduate, and be in the hands of a good person who was coaching the team. And I, you know, couldn't have known York better than I did. And Coach York expressed interest, and Graham had always been a BC fan because I introduced him to Yorkie when he was a young guy. So, and Yorkie would send him a championship hat when they won an NCAA or something, so he had them if he wanted them. So I said to Coach York, I said, if you think he's good enough to play for you, he'll come. And he did, and it was great because I just knew he was in good hands, that Coach York has always had his priorities in the right order. You know, it's family, and it's education, and then it's hockey. And you know, when I was at Bowling Green, he used to give us exam week off. Like, we didn't have to practice if we didn't want to, even though we were playing that weekend, because the grades were more important that particular week. So anyway, that's what I was hoping for. And Jerry played a style where, you know, it's interesting, Graham mentioned the other day how much he's enjoying playing in the American League, because of the skill and the talent and how competitive it is. And he said, if you're in the right position, the right things happen, and you get the puck or you get to move the puck. And he said college hockey was hard because there were too many teams sitting back and just playing a 1-1-3, or just clogging up the neutral zone. And Boston College was the opposite. It was just, we've got some concepts that you got to pay attention to, but just go play. Mm-hmm. And they do. And they he's had good teams for years because it's a fun way to play.
What when was Graham born? Where were you?
98.
So you would
he was
you
born in Washington.
Washington.
Yeah.
So was it hard being a hockey dad while you were still running a National Hockey League team? Was it challenging?
In terms of time management, yeah. Because I'd come home after work and the nights that I could take him to practice. And Washington isn't easy to navigate. And I'd throw him in the car, and he'd fall asleep right away after school and nap all the way to until we got to practice. And he'd practice, and we'd come back, and he'd do his homework all the way back. And but it was nice time to spend with him and watch him skate and everything else. I actually thought it was kind of neat because, you know, you get another education in hockey of what's going on at that time at the youth level. And the same issues that we deal with at the NHL with players, you're dealing with at that age too.
Really?
You know, share the puck, move the puck, you know, hustle, don't be selfish, don't take penalties. It's all the same thing. It was kind of neat, actually.
How do you, as President of Hockey Operations, in your role now, how do you deal with personalities? Because you're trying to mold a team, but then the manager and the coach sort of much more hands-on.
Yeah.
So how much do you get involved in personalities?
Well,
because you're always a people person.
Yeah,
you are.
And that's, I think, how we manage it most of the time. Mm-hmm. Like Kelly and I are always, you know, the first ones at the rink, and we're in the breakfast room, and he and I are doing some business there. And then the players trickle in, and you see someone's hobbling a little bit, or someone's a little down, or, you know, what's going on with that guy? Maybe we should talk to him a little bit. And if you want to know what's going on, you got to be among the troops. So that's generally how we deal with things. Sometimes there's another conversation that's needed, and that is for Kelly to do. You know, I have so much respect for Kelly and so much respect for the GM position that you've got to give him the room to do that. And so whenever we have meetings or whenever he has to meet with a player, but when we have staff meetings and so on, he's running the meeting. And I try not to talk at all because he's got to be in charge of that. And it's worked tremendously well for both of us. I think we have a great friendship, and professionally, I think we're really good together.
Did you know him at all?
I did not. I've heard some good things about him from our scouts over the years in passing, but I didn't know him. I was aware before I got the job that he had been talking to Toronto a little bit about a job. And it's funny, I called Mike Babcock to ask him, can you talk to me about Kelly McCrimmon? You know him from, you know, being out west. And he said, sure. And we had this great conversation. And then as we were getting off the phone, he said, well, by the way, we're trying to hire him in Toronto.
Really?
Yeah. So he got off the phone with me and called Lou and said, you know, McPhee's trying to hire McCrimmon in Vegas. So there was that, and there are a couple of other teams.
And you and Lou go way back.
Yep. And but I think it was the best opportunity for him, and sure glad he came because he's been such a big part of what we've been able to do. And I promised him at that point that you're going to be in on every single decision we make, every single thing we do. We'll do it together. And that's the way we've done it, and it's the way we still do it. We talk all the time about what we have to do next or how we address certain things. And I don't know that we've ever really disagreed on anything. It's just been a great working relationship, and I'm happy that Bill Foley's given us the room that he's given us to do what we need to do. He respects the chain of command and he hired us to do the job, and he lets us do the job.
What's the favorite thing about your job that you do? Or the most enjoyable thing that you do?
Well, it's always winning a game, but it's almost everything. You know, it's almost everything you do. I love watching a practice. I love watching these guys train. I love watching them get ready for games. I like all that goes into it, whether you're working on the draft, whether you're doing some analytics, whether you're working with the equipment staff and or working with the league on the next event you're doing. I can't say that there's any one thing that's my favorite thing to do. I love early morning practices and the sounds of a practice and just looking at the unbelievable talent. And you know, just a trip like we had last week where we went out east and played four of the best teams in the league right now, that was fun. You know, it was fun to see our guys really have to raise the level of their game, and they were really good defensively on that trip, and we know what's in there, we know they can do it, but you need that challenge sometimes. Come back home and you play a team like Buffalo that's having a tough year, and they're not on their game. They weren't on their game for us the other night. I guess they played well in Colorado. But you see, you know, we played well the first half of the game, and then you start to drift a little bit because you've got a little bit too much time, and now you're trading chances and everything else. But just being able to talk about this game, to do what we're doing now, to show up every day, working for an NHL hockey team. It's working in the league is the reward in and of itself. I mean, that's the reward. It's being able to play in this, play or work in this league.
Have you always been that big picture optimistic person, or did you have to teach yourself to be that big picture optimistic person?
Well, I do, it's interesting.
I learned how to. I wasn't that way at the start.
Right.
I was very tunnel vision.
Yeah.
And energetic. And hard intense, on yourself. Hard on myself. Everything.
Demanding. Yeah. And overanalyzing everything. Yeah. And that I think that when you're young, you're doing that because you're working your way up. You want to. Sometimes you don't know that you can do something until you do it. Some people know before that, yeah, I can do this and I'm going to do it. But
I'm jealous of those people.
Yeah, but sometimes you have to do it and then you can say, okay, I belong. But I remember when I was between jobs, and I worked with the Islanders and then came to Vegas. And that year while we were... You know, before we had the team, when we were building and putting the organization together, a guy from the Islanders called me and said, you know, whenever I see you on TV now, you're smiling. And it looks like you're happy. And I guess I wasn't doing that enough the first time around. Then you get some forced time off, and you realize what you're missing, and you realize if you get a second chance... that you'll enjoy the journey a little bit more, too.
But I think we live parallel lives in a lot of ways. Jack's here. That's going to make you smile. Jack Eichel's in Vegas, has been practicing for a long time.
Yep.
Is there a timeline?
There hasn't been.
Yeah.
Only because, you know, there are unknowns with this. We just wanted to... What we want to make sure is that when he goes into the lineup, he stays in the lineup. Mm. And we don't have setbacks... with either conditioning or another injury or, you know, the surgery that he's had. So everything has gone as well as it could possibly go to this point. And, you know, there's going to come a time when he comes to us and says, I'm ready to go. And the medical staff comes to us and says, he's ready to go. And when that time comes, he's going. We're putting him in.
So do you talk... right now about how he's feeling and doing and the medical staff?
No.
Or is it the 3 months? Like 3 months is February 12th, so that's right around the corner. That's always been the baseline. But there's been no...
It had to be at least 3 months.
Yeah.
And then we'll see where he is then. But we didn't want to ask him every day. It's hard on a player who's coming back from an injury to keep, you know, people are just being friendly when they say, how you doing or how you feeling. But when you hear that 20 times a day, it can wear on you. So we typically don't do that with our guys. When someone's coming back from an injury, when they're ready to go, they're ready to go. And it can't be, you know, when they come to you and say, think I'm ready to go, and you say, well, how is it? Well, I'm okay. Or it's not bad. That's not good enough.
Right.
It's got to be, I'm 100%. I'm ready to go.
He looks good.
He does.
And Kelly warned us that he was going to look really good, but yep, we'd have to be patient. But
exactly.
I'm blown away by even knowing that, and still, because I get to watch him every day for my job. And
you've had a first-hand look, too, or experience of facing him.
Yes, in a couple of practice sessions where it just pops off a stick.
Yeah.
The part of that
puck must be on you so quick.
I don't move.
Yeah.
So if it hits me, it hits me.
Like
if
I remember scores, Kenny Holland talking about Brett Hull shooting on him once in practice, and he said it didn't feel particularly hard or heavy. It was just on me so quick.
Yeah.
It's hard to react to it.
There's I would say Patrick
or control it.
Got a heavier shot, but there's Jack's right there, and I'm impressed in my opportunity to skate with him a couple of times how competitive he is.
Mm.
Like he gets downright sour if things aren't going, if he misses a couple of pucks, and then boom, he changes it around. Like there's no wiggle room for him out there having fun and having a birthday party skate.
Yeah.
He's working hard, and that's been the most impressive part.
And it's interesting that our scouts have said, when we were going through this process, and in years before that, when we were evaluating players, that when he's playing against the top centers, whether it's a McDavid or a MacKinnon or a Matthews, his game goes even to a higher level. Or when he's playing in Boston, his hometown, like he plays at a high level, but he finds another level to get to when he's really challenged. So.
Yeah, he did a drill the other day where Misha Donskov, one of your assistant coaches, was flipping pucks in knee-high behind the goal line, and each player, there's maybe six forwards, they all had to knock it down and make a pass. And the other forwards, they were probably 70% to 50% to clean knock it down and pass the puck. Jack never missed one. It was freaky.
Wow.
So
I wonder if he ever played lacrosse.
Because
a lot of those guys have that dexterity to knock things out of the air.
I won't ask him because I'm afraid he's going to shoot a puck at me again. Hey, George, do you ever think you'd be an ambassador for Las Vegas? Pretty cool.
No. And I don't know how good I've been in that regard, but it's been this is a different kind of weekend to we're all mighty proud of this.
Yeah.
You know, that we've got the All-Star game in Vegas, and Vegas has again become this thriving hockey market and this incredible fan base, and it's just nice to walk around and enjoy this.
How many people have asked you for recommendations on restaurants or?
Not many, but we're taking lots of pictures. You know, the people are, and that's the one thing I've really enjoyed about the market too. That the fans are so nice about things. Mm-hmm. They're just genuinely nice people. And, you know, they ask if they can bother you for a picture. Of course, you know, it's fun to be able to make somebody's day because you put your arm around them and take a picture. That's a neat feeling.
Well, I know I've told the story before, but when I was on my sabbatical, you were great taking me under your wing, and we had some awesome conversations, especially one in Toronto. And I've never and will never forget what you said to me during that point. And I can't be more privileged and proud to be working with you.
Well, it's neat. You know, you can't ever lose hope. Mm-hmm. And settle for something less than what you're capable of doing. And if for anybody that's in that situation, don't lose hope. And your next gig could be the best one you've ever had.
It certainly has here.
Yeah, me too. So we're lucky, my friend.
Awesome.
Thanks.
George McPhee, thanks for joining us on the Chirp.
Thanks, Darren.
Hear that last conversation? I work for him. But we have a conversation, and he's like that with everybody in the office, George McPhee. I hope you appreciated that different
angle with George and that exposure to the relationship that George can bring and his caring personality. And then you've got the a little bit more aloof relationship or casual relationship with Chris King from the president, vice president of hockey operations with the National Hockey League. A great player, a hardworking player, such a great teammate, and the follows into that with his friendship and Bill Daly, who's become a good buddy through the course of the year. So it's basically like we're on location, we're in Las Vegas, and I'm hanging out with buddies. It's not the hangover, like truly like the hangover. We're not going to get into any craziness because I'm going home after this, but it's a whole lot of fun hanging out with friends. We're going to do it again later on this weekend and publish that episode with more people that I know are in the loop. I'm not going to tease the names just yet because we might add a couple and I don't want to be that person that leaves somebody out. But there's a lot of fun coming up in part two of the Chirp at NHL Fanfare. Subscribe, like, share it. If you can do one thing for me, share it. And producer Bob, he loves sharing. He likes sharing everything but his bottle of water, which he hid, took away from my desk during the course of the episode. Honestly, thanks for listening. Thanks for being part of this journey. I hope you enjoyed hanging out with my buddies. And we'll do it again next time on The Chirp with Darren Millard.